Get ready, Arizona. Put down the Fish Wrap subscription, freshen up your coffee, and turn up your radio. It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. We're going to learn something today. We have three gentlemen in here with me that are going to explain to us why we need an initiative that would limit services to immigrants. Now, legal, illegal, we're going to find out. We're going to find out what an immigrant is. We're going to find out what should or shouldn't be illegal. We're going to find out what benefits they're getting now that they shouldn't be getting. Now, the thing is that these people have been before the media before. They've been asked questions by other talk show hosts. They've been doing a lot of interviews. And we knew about this over a month and a half ago this was going to happen. And we kind of, you know, held off. We wanted to, after the dust had settled a little bit, we wanted to do it after, you know, they thought they got practiced and got their rhetoric down. So now they're going to have to come before me. Now, would a libertarian ask different questions? Are they going to be able to answer them? Well, we're going to find out. Because we have Henry Esparza. He's Maricopa County Chairman of PAN. Now, let them tell you what that represents. Representative Appropriations Chairman, Chair, Russell Pierce. We've had Russell on the show before. Good friend. We have Rusty Childress. He's a treasurer. Now, they're going to explain to us. Now, I have had a couple opportunities to look at it. I had an email and so on. Take a look at the initiative. I have forced myself not to, because I'm going to be John Q. Public, and you're going to explain it to me, and then I'm going to ask the questions that I think you either want to ask or should ask, and then we're going to see where the real problem is. Because is it the immigrants? Now, in my opinion, I go right into this right off the bat. As far as I'm concerned, all the problems that there are with costing us money, you know, the argument for the immigrants taking our money is that I don't care whether the people are doing it as citizens or as non-citizens. They're still taking my money. Where is that initiative? Well, we'll give them a chance. It's their opportunity. It's three against one. Let's see how we do. So who wants to take it for? Who wants to explain the initiative? Who wants to tell me what it's about? Volunteer? Anyway. Russell Pierce, you win. Go ahead.
Well, Ernest, thank you very much. I cannot thank you enough for being able to talk about this issue. The initiative probably ought to be called It's Enough, It's Enough. And again, we can define immigrants, and I want to talk about illegal, and we, of course, have legal and illegal. You know, 1965, we expanded the role of immigration. President Johnson kind of threw the back door, signed a thing that increased legal immigration into this country from 300,000 to 1 million people. But what we have is a flood coming across our borders, illegally through the back door. And what these folks are doing, and some are certainly good folks, some are here for opportunity, but we do no criminal history check. Many of them come across, and they're criminally inclined. They're involved in all kinds of criminal activity here. It's a serious problem. But one of the things that's wrong, very simple, is they're involved in our political process. There's hundreds of them being registered. We talk to the Border Patrol, and they say more and more they're finding as they catch these groups of folks that with their documentation of false green cards and false Social Security cards, they're finding many, many voter identification cards from these folks. And the other thing they're doing is, again, they're at the public trough. Center for Immigration Studies, a national organization started in 1985 that's nonpartisan and does lots and lots of research on immigration. Through their research, they determined that of legal immigrants, about 37% are involved in some form of welfare program. Illegal immigrants, 31% are on some welfare program. Citizens, born citizens of the United States, is about 14%. I mean, so we have a serious problem. If you're in this country illegally, if you come through the back door, you certainly don't have a right to be a burden to the taxpayers of the state of Arizona. This initiative does just two things, in essence. Requires eligibility to vote. Gee, we thought we already had that. That you can't vote if you're not a citizen. You can't participate in our election process if you're not a citizen of the United States. And you can't be on public welfare. You can't come here and claim you're here for opportunity and freedom, and yet you come here and you're on the public dole. And, of course, we can talk about welfare. I mean, I don't think government should be in the business of plundering the taxpayer and redistributing their money. But the point is, this is a very clear issue. It's already against the law. Most people think it's already against the law. Those folks who are, and again, this organization is called Protect Arizona Now. Well, the other group is Protect the Illegals Now. They're the pins with the pants. And very simply, you know, somebody has to stand up for the taxpayers. Somebody has to stand up, protect the integrity of our system, and you can't participate both on the welfare programs or in our voting process if you're not a citizen and in this country legally. It's just outrageous, and it's amazing to me that we'd have any opposition to something so simple that simply says, if you're going to vote, gee whiz, folks, ought to be some verification you're a citizen. And if you're going to get on public dole, which I have a problem with anybody, I mean, we know we have a bloated welfare state, but at least you ought to be eligible. You ought to be eligible. You ought not to be stealing money outside of the law.
This is going to be a good conversation, I promise, and I'll have my opinion as soon as we come back after this Book of the Week by Lambert, and we'll go ahead and do a traffic break, and then I'll have something to say. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Lambert for the Book of the Week. For this week, I recommend Defending the Undefendable by Walter Block. This book is a defense of 32 different characters, taken one chapter for each, whom many would consider to be unsavory and harmful to society. But Dr. Block shows by brilliant economic analysis that these characters, while not conforming to many people's idea of morality, nonetheless observe to pursue their nonviolent occupations without being bothered. Those whom he defends are the prostitute, the pimp, the drug pusher, the blackmailer, the counterfeiter, the ticket scalper, the strip miner, and many more. It's hard to choose, but my favorite chapter is Block's defense of the dishonest cop. He points out that cops often spend their time pursuing and arresting people involved in peaceful activities, such as gambling, prostitution, drug pushing, and others. Although cops swear to protect the right of individuals, they also swear to uphold the law. When these two goals are contradictory, they invariably choose the latter, to uphold the law. Thus, dishonest cops who accept bribes to look the other way are actually benefiting society by allowing voluntary exchanges to occur, which in turn results in increased economic activity and an increase in social utility. Block's condemnation of cops rigidly enforcing immoral laws is particularly trenchant, and I quote, "It is difficult to countenance the notion that breaking the law is necessarily evil. Indeed, if the Nuremberg trials have taught us anything, it is the diametric opposite of this view. The lesson of the trials is that some laws are in and of themselves evil, and to obey them is wrong. It is equally difficult to understand the notion that selective law breaking establishes a precedent which ultimately leads to chaos. The only precedent such an action establishes is that illegitimate laws may be disobeyed. This does not imply chaos and arbitrary murder. It implies morality. Had such a precedent been firmly established at the time the Nazis came to power, concentration camp guards might have refused to obey lawful orders to murder hapless victims." This book was written in 1976, before our own Nazi-style law enforcement activities went into high gear, such as Waco. Although written in a lively and humorous style, Dr. Block proves the serious political and philosophical point that in a just society, all deviant but non-aggressive behavior should be permitted. I'm Lambert, and that's the Book of the Week.
And we're back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Now, in studio, we have Henry Esparza, Representative Russell Pierce, and Rusty Childress. Now, let me go ahead and give you my summary on the issue. It's immigration, okay? Now, the initiative normally has the, which emphasis is it going to have? Well, what they want to emphasize is if you have people that are going to be here illegally, you know, at least we should make sure that they're not voting. We should at least make sure that they're not, you know, determining the political process that they have no right under the Constitution to be able to do. So we're going to say, you know what? We're going to make sure that this person that is coming to this voting polling booth or sending in their absentee are going to have to produce identification. State-issued identification. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. But the thing is that what they want to do is they want to make sure that these people that are coming here, they're illegal. Are they entitled to have access to our welfare system? Let me give you where this history comes from, and you'll understand from my perspective just a little bit. So you guys give me a few minutes. In 1996, when Pat Buchanan was running for president, we had a lot of his forward guys that would come in and kind of set up and talk to people before he came. And they wanted to know why our organization, SAFE, Second Amendment is for Everyone, real pro-gun, no-compromise organization, why we were not openly supportive of Buchanan. He went to the gun show. He held a gun above his head, man. You know, of course, it was a deer rifle, you know. He had a black magazine detachable pistol grip assault rifle, and that might have had more impact. But the thing is that he held up this deer rifle, and he says, you know, I'm Second Amendment. Why aren't you supporting that? And we said, because of the immigration position. Buchanan's position was this. You cannot have access to any of the services if you are not a U.S. citizen, as if it was okay if you were a U.S. citizen. He blamed the court system for their interpretation of the Constitution that would allow this. We understand the problem. This is the problem. The 14th Amendment, with all its faults, requires this, that every human being be treated equally under the law. It says nothing about citizens. So this is what happens. If you create a welfare program, and you have a human being that can fog a mirror, he can breathe in and out, all right? He walks up and says, I meet this requirement for this program, gimme. And they go, yes'm, you do, here you are. Now, to change that, what you would have to do would put two classifications on what a human being is. You would have to say, you are a human being. America is home base. You make it in here, you're treated equally under the law, period. Now, well, except for Homeland Defense now and such, but, you know, that's another issue. But what happens as a human being, you come here, you win. You have to be treated equally under the law. The law is that you get access to these programs if you qualify. Now we wish to change the law and say we're going to make people that are not naturalized citizens here, they are going to be a different classification. I understand. I'm not even necessarily saying that's bad. What I am saying is this, that by doing that, what you have done is you are legitimizing other people taking from the productivity of others and redistributing it to someone, and I don't care whether they're a citizen or not. The fact that they got a federal ID, you know, a national ID card to prove to me that they can get it, which is exactly what's going to happen, to prove that you can vote, to prove that you can get access to welfare, to prove that you can qualify for student loans, to prove that you get discounts for going to state university, to prove that you have to, because right now it exists. You have to, if you want to participate in any federal student aid program, you have to sign up and register for the draft. You have to do selective services in order to be able to do that. You have to have a Social Security number in order to be able to work. You have to, you see my point? So now we're going to take and do it the same thing for voting. All right, fine. You know, we want to make sure illegals don't have that opportunity. We want to do the same thing for you to get government services. So we're the situation that I believe we are not addressing the real problem. The real problem is government. It is taking from me that which is mine, and it is redistributing it to someone else that didn't get my permission. That is theft, even when it's done by government and legal on a piece of paper. And that issue is not being addressed. That's my concern, Rusty Childress.
Well, let me ask you, in the game of chess, do you play by the rules or you just make up new rules as you go? You can't play a game without rules. That's just the nature of
tell government
the
that. You know what? Let me explain this. Government is like a playing chess with a three-year-old child. It's easy as snot to beat the living snot out of them right up until they get mad and they just throw all the pieces on the floor and say, I win, you know, and that's exactly what government is.
Let me make another analogy. Would you make excuses for the rapist that has sexual needs too? Would you be compassionate, empathetic to say, well, you know, the guy had needs, and therefore, see, my opinion is this.
You're talking to a libertarian. We deal in life, liberty, property. Does he initiate force? Did he do something to get someone's will? And if you're taking my money and redistributing it, I don't care who you're doing it to. You are stealing from me.
Now
where
we're talking.
Is that in here?
Now we're talking. That's exactly what it is. It's stealing. It's cheating. And it's not playing by the rules. You're a criminal. If you come through my back door at my house as a property owner, and I prefer that you came through the front, does that make me a racist? That makes you a criminal because I'm a property owner. The United States of America, right here, this is our property so far, and we have rights. And you're saying they have equal rights as to, you know, that I'll debate that all day long. But as far as I'm concerned, you came through my back door. You can be treated differently as a criminal, as an illegal, period.
See, Rusty, and I have to stop you there because you're falling into the trap. I don't want you to get too deep, okay? Whenever you say my front door, our, you know, as if the country was private property, you know, I think it should. I mean, I'll tell you right now, you take every single square inch, I want to be able to build condos on the rim of the Grand Canyon, okay? I want to have a big hotel I can bungee jump off into the canyon, make lots of money, all right? I want to have it privatized because if I got to trade that off, oh, you'd lose the pristine, blah, blah. I go, oh, you mean I trade off having billboards on the north face of the Grand Canyon, I get freedom? Guess what? Sell that sucker right now. I want my freedom. So when you say private property, you got ranchers on the border, private property, we are big-time supportive. I've had them on the show. We have Practical Tactical down there and help make sure they got the gear. We were like, I'm a private property owner. I have a guy called one of my wife to find him property that had at least a minimum amount right on the border so that they can do ranch rescue, set up towers, and do it just to make a precedent and a legal issue out of it. I'm like, man, I'm so all over that because it's private property. But the second you start thinking about, you know, I am in control of the rings of power so that we can have the same kind of private property rights on public property, you get into the same situation we had dealing with ADOT on the rest stops where they say, like the private property owners of ADOT, we control whether you can arm yourself or not. That mentality that you have this private property rights on public land is stinking thinking, and you're not going to get by with that on my show. Go ahead.
Ernie, and I appreciate that perspective because I certainly am a property rights guy, a guy that believes in those issues you just talked about. But here's the problem in reality, and I agree, we're a bloated welfare state. We're in the business of plunder. We think government has the right. If it was a private citizen, it'd go to jail. You're absolutely right because we steal money all the time and redistribute it, and it's wrong. But we have several problems in this country. One of them is we have a liberal judiciary, and you can only do so much. We've fallen away from, I think, the vision our founding fathers set up with some of these very pure virtues you're talking about. But let's deal with the reality here. We're a nation of law, rule of law, and the rule of law has to be honored. The Constitution has to be honored. We don't have the liberty to go as far as you'd like to go or other folks would like to go with stopping all the abuses the government's involved in. Let's incrementally deal with the real issue. And the real issue is you have people that steal their way into this country and become a burden to the taxpayer. And you have people that are in this country illegally that are participating in the electoral process, and it's wrong.
I agree. I want to ask you this question while you got you at the mic. There is going to be a legal challenge. Someone's going to come up and say, you have classified this human being as different than this one over here for this. All the people have the laws and privileges equally applied. I mean, it says that in the 14th Amendment. Now, you can argue about changing the 14th Amendment, but you're going to have the 14th Amendment. And even if you, let's say you had the most libertarian and conservative judge sitting there, and he goes, all right.
Or a good conservative Republican judge, right?
There is one. Anyway, so what we'll do is we'll have, you know, the judge you want sitting there saying, you know, we're going to apply the Constitution because that's what's going to be challenged. It's going to be a constitutional challenge saying you have a law in Arizona that says that this person that meets this eligibility requirement cannot have access to this service. All right. Now, then they'll argue, well, he's a taxpayer. Okay, he participates in the economic process. Heck, he bought a pack of gum and had some sales tax on it. I know what's going to happen. So with that, does that give him access to it, yes or no? Well, then you look at the case law, and I know what they're going to say. They are going to say that the Equal Protection Clause applies and that he should have access to this program simply because he can breathe in and out. If not, they're going to be overturning enormous amounts of case law. That's why we have this problem. So the problem is not him. The problem is the program. Get rid of the welfare.
You know, that's a difficult issue to deal with because that's way outside of what, because we are a nation law. And you can talk about the 14th Amendment. You can talk about the other amendments. And I believe in all of them. I don't pick and choose which of those amendments we ought to honor, including the Second Amendment, as you know, where I stand on these liberty issues. But the issue is one. This is a rule of law. I think we're in good standing with the courts, even with their liberal judiciary, which is probably the greatest threat we have to our republic today, is the judiciary and their rewriting of the Constitution.
Agreed.
I mean, we need to appoint strict constitutionalists, people will honor the Constitution, rule on the Constitution, not create law from the bench. It's the most dangerous thing we face in terms of loss of freedom is the courts that go around the elected officials to set law. We have elected officials go too far too, but still there's the process, and the court setting law is the wrong process. So we have a problem with the judiciary, and we recognize that. Looking at case law and all the challenges that have come and anticipating those challenges that are going to come, I think we're on good ground. We're dealing with two things. We're not really changing the law. What we're asking in this is to enforce what people already think is the law and is the Constitution. That is, you have to be a citizen of the United States to vote in our election process. We're saying, give me some evidence you're a citizen before you're registered to vote. And when you go to the polls, simply give me some simple ID. You have to show ID to perform almost any kind of business in this country. Those aren't tough standards.
I think we're going to go to break right now, but you're right. The voting thing is, I don't see the problem with, you know, demonstrating you're that person. The fact that it's so lax the way it is serves somebody. You know, there's something else going on here, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Here on Independent 1310 KXAM, declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and we got some other independence declaring kind of guys here. But now, is it Danny today?
Yeah, it sure
Danny
is.
Danny Sullivan will get you
again.
To work. We're back in the saddle again. We're mopping up the blood as we're going at it here off air. Now, let's take a look at the initiative itself. Okay, now this is what it does. Let's see if we got anything that's unreasonable here. It seems like it's not very long. I like short ones. That's good. We have a, for registering to vote, it has Section 23. It says this. A statement, this is required, you know, is amended to read, this a form used for registration electors shall contain. A statement that the applicant shall submit evidence of United States citizenship with the application and that the registrar shall reject the application if no evidence of citizenship is attached. Now, you would think that that would already be in there. Now, it does. It has a U.S. Are you a U.S. citizen? Why, yes, I am. Give me my welfare, okay? So it's really that simple. Now, they just want to say, look, you know, if you have to be a U.S. citizen, can we check? I mean, let's check. What the heck? Let's check, all right? Because it is a constitutional requirement. So, and a lot of times, you know, voter registration, you know, with that official government number, with that document, you know, you can progressively get more and more stuff. They, you know, a lot of people, they know the system. Now, and you can register, heck, my, you know, 7-8-year-old kids registered and showed up on the registration. Let me tell you what happened. We would register people at gun shows and at different fairs and such like that. And they're like, hey, you know, we go to school. We can fill this out. So my oldest daughter was like filling them out for brothers and sisters. And they're all filling them out and signing them. Put the right birth date. Send it in. I go check something at the county recorder's office one time. Mitch, you know, the computer guy, send right there. And I'm looking. I'm going, I see all my kids' names registered. I'm like, what the heck is this? And they had the right birthdays. How'd they manage that? Well, I think they fixed that problem. But you can see it's that easy to register. So what they're saying is like, you know, in addition to, you know, let's make the date sensitive so that you can't register when you're 7, let's go ahead and say we have to show evidence that you're a citizen. Now, they left that kind of vague on how that's going to be done and the responsibility of the registrar. But let's go ahead and do that. You got my vote on that one. What the heck? Rusty, you had something?
Well, let me just throw another analogy, too. You know, people criticize this because, what, do you make an INS agents out of everyone? Well, no. If you fly a plane, the stewardess or whatever is going to ask for your ID before you get on the aircraft. Does that make her an INS agent? No. When you rent a video and you sign up to get a video card, you have to show ID. Does that make them an INS agent? No. So, you know, the laws are already on the books. We're just saying show a little proof, you know, get out of the fraudulent area here, and let's just verify that these folks are actual legal citizens deserving of welfare and being able to register to vote.
No one's deserving of welfare.
can I make a comment on that? Because Rusty hits a good point here, Ernie, and that is this is about fraud. And if you're a public employee and you're giving out somebody else's money, shouldn't I have a burden on you to report fraud? You have no right to continue to watch fraud go on and not be responsible to report it. And that's all we're asking them to do. We're not asking them to arrest anybody. We're not asking them to be the policeman. We're saying, you know what, if you feel fraud is going on, you have an obligation to report it. That's all we're asking.
This is the concern that I have. And when this first started and I was approached about this issue, and when I had it explained to me, I understood exactly what was going to be required, a national ID card. There's just no getting around it. That's what's going to happen. Your papers, please. And this is because what's going to happen is we progressively get further and further into having to be able to demonstrate that we are in the system. We got the mark of the beast, that we have our card. I see it, I see it, I see it, and it's going to be a double-edged sword. It's going to come back and get you.
Let me ask you on the proposed congressional laws that are out there right now have to deal with guest worker programs and amnesty, which I completely am against because that will solve no problem at all with our open borders. And they're talking about biometric IDs. You know, that's the cure-all as far as our Congress is concerned and the President of the United States, but I don't think so. But I think you're going to
run
into the same thing.
You're talking about chipping. You're talking about putting chips on somebody's skin.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I feel warm and fuzzy already.
Yeah.
Me too. I agree.
The one problem that we also have to deal with.
This is Henry.
Is that no matter what it's going to take to do this, you kind of have a lot of people out there. I'm talking about illegal immigrants and who knows what else. But you know they're going to be selling green cards. They're going to be selling documents that are fraud that aren't true. And I don't really see anybody really looking into it. They see it. Well, okay, we'll take it. Square the box. You're gone. But there's a lot of activity that's got to be policed, and having these people selling, as I said, documents, green cards, whatever permits what's acquired, who's monitoring what they're doing? You know, they're catching them in apartment complexes, and they cater to the illegal immigrants. They take it, they jump on it, and then from there they take it. And I don't think we really monitor it that well.
Let me go ahead and bring this up. You'll be interested in this. You hear me talk a lot about when Don Bowles got killed here, they did a bunch of reporters called the Investigative Reporters and Editors Group. They came in from all over the country, took over the whole top floor of the Adams Hotel, and spent months here. They did an enormous investigation of corruption here in Arizona, and one of the guys from Detroit wrote a book called The Arizona Project. You go to www.ire.org, and you'll see the Arizona Project there. They're out of the Midwest at headquarters. And I've read the book. Fascinating. What it did is it linked all the political heads, U.S. senators, and his initials were Barry Goldwater, and his brother, what was his brother's name? Whatever. Barry's brother, Robert. Now, what happened was they've tracked that a lot of the illegal immigration to when they had Arrowhead Ranch and now has nice homes up there used to be orchards. Now, these orchards and so on were manned by illegal immigrants that they brought in by the truckloads. It was all part. When you did any investigation, you had the Border Patrol or INS, and you start to find out that they just stopped. Why? Because it benefited the people up top that you're asking to help you. They are part of the problem. The government is the problem. They are the ones in charge of this problem, Rusty.
The government endorses this problem. They are the problem. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, and we want them to be part of the solution, and we're going to force them to weigh in on this thing and become part of the solution.
Now, force them. I mean, the thing is that whenever you create a power that you give the government, there's always someone that wants to be in control of that power to their end. I'm saying eliminate the power. I see too much power going on here, and a national ID card is just another level of power.
You remember in Watergate, there was Deep Throat, and he said, follow the money.
Oh, yeah, an easy way to find out.
And follow the votes here. That's the two things. People say, well, why is this problem so pervasive? Follow the money and follow the votes, and you'll figure it out.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, this is so simple. And you'll say, well, you know, it leads up to these, like, Democrat guys. And I'll go, you know what? And the guys behind them are the same guys that are behind the Republican guys. It's statist. It's right. Collectivist. It's government. There is no label. They don't care what they got an R or D on their blazer. They just want control.
Ernie, you know, you hit some soft spots there, and you're absolutely true. It's not just the left on this issue. There is sin on the left and the right because they want the political process to be affected and folks to come here for obvious and lots of reasons. The right wants cheap labor, and you're right. It's on both sides. But the bottom line is citizens are tired of it. You know, the last Roe proposal showed that 85% of the American citizens want something done about illegal immigration. Only 20%, 15 to 20% of the politicians feel it's a serious problem. Clearly, they're out of step with their electorate. And that's why we've chosen to go to the people, because they know the problem. They live with the problem. This is about protecting citizens, the Arizona economy. This is about safe neighbors. This is about the quality of life. This is about respect for the law. This is about doing the right thing. And if you look at California, and I hate to talk about California, I mean, and think anything in California fits or compares to Arizona, but the truth is we have a lot of similarities, unfortunately. But the California folks, even they who we consider liberal, they, when they're given a chance to vote in secret at the polls, they've rejected affirmative action. They've rejected benefits to illegals. They have stood tall by a large majority, two-thirds of the votes, and that's what's going to happen in Arizona. People are tired. I talk to people every day. All of us do. We're returning hundreds of phone calls. People are tired, fed up, and they want to know, where do I sign?
And you're absolutely right, and I want to make sure that's what the show is about. We go to the kernel of the truth here. I want them to know what's going on. This is what you are signing on to. I signed the petition. I sign all of them now. You know, I just said, yeah, put it on there so I have a chance to not vote for it or not. Heck, you're lucky if you get me to the polls, I go vote at all. So the thing is that, because I don't see it, that's where change is going to come. It's going to come from economics. That's just that's my opinion. Now, this is what you're signing on to, what you're voting for if you vote for this. Section 3. Now, it goes... Here's added language, verifying applicants for public benefits and violation classification, citizen suits, et cetera. An agency of this state and all of its political subdivisions, including local governments that are responsible for the administration of state and local public benefits that are not federally mandated, shall do all of the following. And you go down to 3. Refuse to accept any identification card issued by the state or any political subdivision of the state, including a driver's license, to establish identity or determine eligibility for those benefits unless, now they're saying you can't accept a driver's license unless the issuing authority, being DMV, has verified the immigration status of the applicant. Now, you used to be director of DMV, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now to do this, what you're saying is that you are not going to, the driver's license to get this benefit is not going to be any good unless you, as director of DMV, whoever the director is now, has taken the opportunity to verify the immigration status of this individual getting the driver's license. And when we come back, you're going to go ahead and tell us how you're going to do that after we do a check on traffic with Danny Sullivan. Go ahead, Danny. That's what these guys want. We got Henry Esparza, Representative Russell Pierce, and Rusty Childress in, and they want to make sure that, you know, let's just take the country back, man. It's going to the illegals. Well, how are we going to do that? How are we going to do it? Now, one thing, Russell has experience. He was the DMV director, the Department of Motor Vehicles. Now, there's a part in here that says that the Department of Motor Vehicle, or any benefit, okay, to say you're going for a welfare benefit of any kind, well, that department will refuse to accept any identification card issued even by the state, a driver's license, unless that driver's license has been issued after verifying the immigration status of the applicant. Now, my question, of course, is, all right, how do you do that? National ID card?
No. When I was the DMV director, One of the concerns I had right after I took office is many that I went to around the state. We were issuing licenses to illegals, and it was clear. In fact, if you spoke English, it was clearly a second language because you didn't fit in. In Cano office, Casa Grande, Nogales, those offices, I mean, they were just overran, and it was clear. And they brought foreign identification, no local, unverifiable ID. I mean, you can't verify foreign documentation. So you could be issuing a license to anybody in the world. You'd have no idea who it is because you can't verify it. So it was asinine that we would issue a driver's license that people accept that you are who you say you are. They expect the state to have done due diligence, that everything about it is good, because that's how you transact business with the banks, with whoever for security purposes. That's how you do business in the state. So I went to the legislature and wrote legislation to stop doing that, to put a requirement for legal presence that you must prove you have legal presence in the United States to get an Arizona driver's license or an Arizona ID card.
Which is what? I mean, you would accept what? I go
well,
in.
Well, there's a whole list. If you go to Service Arizona on the web, you'll see a whole list of things that we accept, but they're as primary ID. But a driver's license from another state may not be enough, because if they don't have a legal presence requirement, then you need to bring in identification, birth certificate, passport with an I-94, whatever you need, but you need to prove that you're in this country legally, because we're not going to issue you ID.
Now, I get it, and that's back up. It's back illegally. Up. You glazed over it. I mean, I just went through this. I got my 15-and-a-half-year-old son goes down. He can't get a driver's license unless he gives him a Social Security number. Oh, I'm sorry. You can't. We challenged it. Went to the administrative hearings.
Let me deal with that, because that's a federal mandate. Again, federal government constantly runs over 10th Amendment rights. But here's the issue. When we complied with that law, again, I went to the legislature and had them do it in such a way that we buried the information. Your Social Security number is only used for two purposes. It is not given out to anybody. It's suppressed in the system. It's only used to verify that it's your number because of fraud. That it's a valid number and it belongs to you. That's all it's used for, and it's suppressed. It's not on your driver's license anymore. We don't even give it out to law enforcement. It's given out to nobody. It's suppressed in the system. You know, and I did that purposely so that we as a state make that decision. You had to have
it.
You had to have it.
Let me tell you what happens. I get stopped, and I accidentally on purpose forgot my driver's license.
We're getting away with this initiative. Go ahead.
So this is bearing on this, and you'll see.
Okay, yes.
A law enforcement officer said, well, give me your Social Security number, and, you know, we'll pull it up. Well, of course they're linked. Of course they know how to do it. Of course it's part of the system. The thing is it's required in order to get this. And just as I would say for a citizen, the Social Security number is your national ID number, which it was never supposed to be, you're going to have something like that for an illegal immigrant or someone that wishes to be legal or to even check. You're going to need something like that. What is it going to be?
Well, I don't know that that's true. You're going to need something like that. Mandated to take your Social Security number. We can't issue a license from the federal government. So I did it in a way that is not as intrusive. It's not a part of your license. It's not on there. It's just two purposes.
If I'm a legal immigrant, do I have to have a Social Security number?
There are hundreds. Social Security office just did a survey here a while back in the agribusiness, agriculture. 7 out of 10 Social Security numbers they looked at were fraudulent. We know there's abuse. Your Social Security number could be used by 2 or 3 people today. They know the people that are in this country illegally, especially if they're using that Social Security number to pay tax, they're using a fraudulent because they're not paying taxes.
We got lots more to talk about, and we'll be right out of here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, and the three lovely gentlemen before me when we get back after the top of the hour break.
Get ready, Arizona. Put down the fish wrap subscription, freshen up your coffee, and turn up your radio. It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock.
Okay, 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 okay. I'll let you guys call in later, all right? At 8:30, you call in, we'll start lining you up, but I'm warning you. You know, there's a lot of people been calling. We want to get this issue out. Everybody's got an opinion. I know. But, you know, guess what? It's my show. I get to have mine. You know, when I'm done telling you my opinion, then you can tell me yours. But at 8:30, go ahead and start calling in. We'll line you up. And you'll no long speeches. That's what these three guys are in here for. Okay? If you wanted to make long speeches, then you get up here in the microphone. Now, you get 30 seconds. I mean, you make whatever comment. You get your question. Boom, you're done. Next, I push the button. Okay? That's how it's going to work. Now, 8:30, you go ahead and call in, and we'll get it going. But right now, we have Henry Esparza. Is Esparza, is that a Hispanic name?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so with Esparza, you know, if I say it right, Esparza?
Esparza, that's correct.
Now, I have found in my travels that there are a lot of, you know, successful, integrated Hispanic heritage individuals that are very much against illegal immigration. This is the, they're like, hey, man, I did it. Mm-hmm. I went through the process. I did my part. And now, but the laws are different, too. I mean, you know, past 10, 15, 20 years, it's gotten nearly impossible to be able to come in legally through process mm-hmm. from Mexico. So from your perspective, you know, what is it that you're saying? I mean, what is it you want to tell these people that you just can't come now, go find freedom in your own country? Do, you know, what's your message?
I think a lot of it is that a lot of the Mexicans that came from there, they came with the right idea to prosper here and to raise a family and educate, but they did it the right way. They did it. They knew that that's the way that it made easier for them for the transition to do so. When the illegal immigrants come here, it kind of sets them back. It makes them feel like, you know, I went through the trouble of getting documented and having myself legally here, whatever it took to do it, because they wanted to come to America for that reason. They wanted to be an American, but yet maintain their heritage. But, you know, when you get people coming across the border, that intent isn't the same. They're more up into other things taking place. And it embarrasses a lot of the Mexican-Americans that have come here. They try, because then they get singled out and saying, well, look, you know, how do I know you're not from Mexico? How do I know that you're not doing these, you know, the things that they're doing illegally, drugs, coyotes bringing people, so on and so forth.
So getting a national ID, you know, a badge, a Star David on your arm would make you feel better?
Not necessarily, because that could be fraud, too. That could have come from an alley. Who knows where that came from? So not necessarily.
Well, what is it that you're looking? What kind of security are you looking for? You know, I can understand your point. I can understand having a stereotype that's, you know, bestowed upon you unjustly, and you want to correct that. But you can understand from a libertarian perspective. You know, I see the solution for all of this coming in papers, please. I see it happening. Mm-hmm. And we have a gentleman that was on the show last week or two, Terry Breese, that travels between Tucson and Kitt Peak. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens is, he's a scientist up there. Well, what happens is they have roadblocks. They're 50 miles from the border. Mm-hmm. They're making, you know, all kinds of enforcement 50 miles from the border. Why 50 miles from the border? If this is truly a problem of people coming across the border, why are we not on the border? They're just using an excuse for more control and power, little police state Gestapo SS tactic Nazi crap. And what we have is now, you know, we're going to be, oh, well, you know, so we don't have to deal with this kind of problem. We'll just have papers or a special sticker in my window or whatever, and then you become Jerusalem. I'm going, if you really have this problem, why are we not addressing it at the border? What is your response to that? We're not at the border because why?
That's a good question. You know, I've been asked that question several times myself. Why isn't the military, why isn't there more Border Patrol officers at the border? You know, we ask the Border Patrol that question. We've asked other dignitaries that have been there, and they have no answer. I don't know. I don't know why President...
Because they want it to be. When Ranch Rescue, we have Tim Weaver told me this story. He goes down there. And they guard certain sections and, you know, passageways and ravines and such. And this is what happens. The Border Patrol will be there. It's 3 o'clock. It's shift change. They go back in, change out crews and the trucks, gas them up and everything. There's an hour, hour and a half gap there. And you think they don't know it. They're sitting over there waiting, you know, having a coffee.
Yeah.
And in a second and a half, boom, they're gone. I apologize, Henry. We'll get right. Hold that thought. We'll get right back after this break. We're going to go and do another Lambert book and then some traffic, and then we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Lambert for the Book of the Week. For this week, I recommend an essay in the Studies and Writings of History, subtitled Selected Writings of Lord Acton, published by Liberty Classics. John E. Dalberg, known as Lord Acton, was an Englishman who lived from 1834 to 1902. He was a historian and political thinker and wrote extensively on these subjects. He is best known for his observation that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Here is what he had to say about the American Civil War in a letter to General Robert E. Lee in 1866. I saw in states' rights the only available check upon the absolutism of the sovereign will, and secession filled me with hope, not as the destruction, but as the redemption of democracy. The institutions of your republic have not exercised on the old world the salutary and liberating influence which ought to have belonged to them by reason of those defects and abuses of principle which the Confederate Constitution was expressly and wisely calculated to remedy. I believe that the example of the great reform would have blessed all the races of mankind by establishing true freedom purged of the native dangers and disorders of republics. Therefore, I deemed that you were fighting the battles of our liberty, our progress, and our civilization, and I mourn for the stake which was lost at Richmond more deeply than I rejoice over that which was saved at Waterloo. Lord Acton knew 134 years ago when most Americans aren't dimly aware of today, namely, that the Civil War marked the end of the sovereignty of the states and the beginning of the federal Leviathan. I'm Lambert, and that's the Book of the Week.
Okay, we're back. Oh, man. We're having some fun now. Now, Henry, I wanted to ask you this. You've been on the border.
That's correct.
You sat there and watched, you know, while the Border Patrol's over there, here they come in over here. Mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, you go down there, they're during shift changes, they know when those are. It's a game that's not even, I mean, there's no respect, you know, for the border, you know, even by the people that are guarding it. The Border Patrol, they know it's a political game. They are not really there to make a difference. And I want to ask you, Why are we playing at this? Either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. What is going on behind the scenes?
I think a lot of it is, I think they put a Border Patrol up there maybe to quiet the community just a little bit, maybe the people concerned in the state. Hey, look, we've got people out there. We've got people patrolling it. We're going to enhance the patrol. I've talked to some Border Patrol officers, and the question is when? When do we get the support? When do we get the help? We've got four officers between one sector to another, and you're looking at 6-7 miles and only four officers, and some have to stop and stabilize themselves and maintain a visual because they spotted some here. Well, then you've got another 4 or 5 miles of open border, no fence at all, nothing. And sometimes you wonder, well, where does Mexico end and America start? You don't even know that it wasn't for a dirt road. So maybe that's that, because they're saying, well, we're sending people, and well, where's the help that we need to patrol this border?
What do you want? I mean, do you want the Great Wall of China with, you know, ramparts
along
the
thing? That would be great.
Okay, so we have a Great Wall of the Amex wall, okay? Yeah. And problem solved?
I go to Mexico without papers. I get arrested. No questions asked. I don't have paper. I'm arrested just like that. They come over here, and they don't have anything. And here, let us give you this. Let's do this.
They give you a meal and send you back and try again.
That's fine.
So we got a wall. Now, we have like 12,000 miles of border, shore, border. I mean, we're talking there lots of places. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm a creative, you know, thinking kind of guy. You know, I'm taking my little boat, you know, up to San Diego. All right, a nice little sailboat, and we'll do them one at a time. Now, I want to get in some country. I'm getting in. Mm-hmm. There's just no getting around it. Mm-hmm. You know, I might have a little trouble in, you know, Zambia or, you know, the Middle East somewhere. But, you know, it's here in America, especially if I'm coming into America, I'm thinking that, you know, I got a pretty easy time of it.
What if the governor stepped up to the pump and said, okay, we're going to put the National Guard down there? What if the President Bush said, look, we're going to put the military down there and use all our technology? I think we could get this thing handled. I don't think it's a big deal at
Absolutely.
All. The political will is what needs to be changed.
Glenn Spencer himself has got technology. He's even got a plane that flies. He gives all the information. He knows exactly what's crossing across that border. He's got cameras. He's got everything going 24. He can tell you.
There's no doubt in my mind that they would be able to do it. I no doubt in my mind.
Well, when you got
But they don't want to.
Because you got
Why?
Nine.
They're playing at it.
Because
Why?
There's 9 million, so they say. I don't know if the number's even accurate. You got 9 million illegal immigrants in this nation. So out of the 9 million, how many votes? How many votes are these politicians going to get?
You know, I'm not even seeing that that is really the... You know, I tell you this. Let me tell you where, in my opinion, we have. We have, here in Arizona, if I had to pick what the dominant industry would be, I would say it would be development, okay? We got the developers. Now, you don't hear me talking about the developers a lot because it's, you know, I got other issues. You understand a bunch of other stuff before we start going and getting a bullet in my brain, okay? But we have, you know, the developers, yeah, and these guys know what I'm talking about. So we have, you know, developers are a big part of this. The next is you have resorts, you know, and the travel industry, okay? Then you have, you know, it's, then you have, your car lot. I mean, you know, the restaurant, you know, agriculture, of course, agriculture. And every single one of these are very dependent in a competitive edge in Arizona, the Southwest, use inexpensive immigrant, illegal or legal labor. And that you're looking at them the gazillions of dollars if you say, you know, we're going to cut your flow off. And you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now, you don't think so? Why do you have the governor of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas all coming and meeting here in Arizona saying we need to loosen up, you know, we need to stop this anti-immigration thing just so we can stay competitive, you know, in, you know, resort activity?
And, Ernie, that's absolutely another one of those myths. I love the myths everybody throws out. I mean, you have the folks, us, Protect Arizona Now, PAN. Then you have the PINs. That's the Protect Illegals Now. You know, there is no shortage of labor. We've lost 400,000 unskilled jobs in the last couple of years. There is no shortage of labor. Half of the illegals that come here are unemployed. You know, they got to live somehow, and that's through benefits and welfare and whatever else they can get on. There is no shortage of unskilled labor. That's absolutely a myth. Their airports have been raided. The air industry's been raided. You know, they're involved in everything in the world. Now, this is it. You know, that they're going to do your hedges. First of all, how racist can you be that we want those people here just to do slave labor? I mean, the other side really are the ones that are pushing, to me, a racist mentality when they think that these people have no value but to come here and do your hedges. This isn't the issue. This is about the rule of law, the dignity
Russell,
of the
when
law.
You can get the...
And that's absolutely a fabrication on their part, think that we have a shortage of unskilled labor and we need that.
I want to see the Restaurant Association. I want to see the Resort Association. I want to see agricultural unions. I want to see, you know, the construction industry and developer and all these guys coming up and endorsing your petition, then your argument will have weight.
Let me talk to them. I'll convince them. Because, you know, there's plenty of legal immigrants here that you can use for cheap labor if that's the argument. And there are millions of people from hundreds of countries, third world countries, that want to come here that are in line right now that it's unfair, you know, for anybody to come through the back door on. They want to come here, and we can have as many of those people as we want, and we'll know who they are, and we'll be able to control the numbers of how many come in. And that's my right.
Use that word control again.
You know,
let me tell you what's going on. I'll get you in just a second.
Okay.
In New Zealand, they have that right now. Now, we've been talking about, you know, hey, you know, we got a lifeboat somewhere. Since we don't have, like, our own cruise ship or a space station, we might go when things implode here. You know, maybe we might buy a little acre in New Zealand. Okay, so we have the International Society for Individual Liberty, ISIL, a lot of people know who that is, having their conference next July in New Zealand. We have trips scheduled, you know, people doing immigration and so on. We're like, you know, it might get bad. So, you know, New Zealand, is it a bad place or not? Well, this is what we find out. New Zealand has just these types of laws. They are very limited on who can come in. Either you have wealth, okay, you know, you can always buy your way in, come on in. Now, they have socialized medicine. There, you know, anybody comes in, you get to go to the doctor. So, you know, they have a legitimate concern as a state. Now, the other thing is they were very socialist, and they kind of freed up their market quite a bit. They found out they got the socialism, it didn't work, so they're leaving. Now, they have a problem with Chinese. Their problem is in Asia there, they got tons of Chinese coming in, taking over their culture, and they're all freaking out. So what they do is they have certain criteria. The government controls. You go to them as an industry. You know what I need? You know what they needed? They need restaurant managers. If you're a restaurant manager, you just bring your butt on in. Or you have point system. Are you a certain age? Do you have children? All these things are being controlled by the government there. Are they doing it well? No. Because it's government, which has influences of different people for different things. It's a joke. And that's where we're going here if you try and cherry pick. Who cherry picks? I say the free market gets to cherry pick. How about that? What the heck? Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, there's talk out there. Well, they're taking the jobs that the Americans don't want. I spoke to several graduates from these culinary schools here in the area, and now the gripe is being, look, I went to school, I'm an American, I pay my time, I'm a citizen, the whole enchilada, as they say. Well, they go in there and they get their job, they get a job, and all of a sudden, some are let go. You know, I got to let you go. Now they find they hire illegal immigrants. They hire Mexicans to do the job that he had. He went to school for it. He trained, did everything.
Wow, but free market.
But the employer took the Hispanic because it was much cheaper. The cost. He had the job. They're losing their jobs because of that. And again, that's bothersome there. So I don't go with the thing as well. You know, they're taking the job that the Americans don't want. There is high school kids that I've talked to. I made a point of talking to them. Hey, they wouldn't mind working at Burger King, McDonald's, any of those places, because they're a senior in high school. They got to find a part-time job so they can do their studies and work. They ain't there no more. There is no more of that because the illegals have taken those jobs because they don't pay them as much, which they get cheated in return also. They should get what everybody does, but they don't. Hey, it's save a couple dollars here and there. I don't agree with this. Well, they're taking the jobs that the Americans don't want. Not anymore. That's something maybe 5-6 years ago.
I don't agree with that statement either. Someone's taking a job, they're taking a job.
Right.
But you're confusing me with someone that cares. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a free market. As, mm-hmm. you know, a First Amendment right of association as an employer, I go to someone, they say, I, with a heavily Hispanic accent, I will make your widgets. And I go, you know, will you do it for this much? They go, yeah, deal. Thank you very much. Get in line.
Can I address that point?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, that is really a good point. First of all, we keep talking about Mexicans because of our contiguous relationship with Mexico. It is our biggest illegal, you know, activity comes from Mexico. But only 70% of the illegals in the state come from Mexico. We're forgetting about other races. This isn't about a race. This is about the rule of law, and it applies to everybody equally and fairly. You know, and the issue is when these folks come here and take jobs, and they're in this country illegally, they impact the market from those who are here legally competing for that job. They've dumbed it down, like I said earlier, we've lost 400,000 jobs and we talk about the taxes. I don't want to cover the tax issue. And we talk about these folks are paying taxes. Most of them aren't. Look at the day laborers over there, paid cash. Most of them, if they're paying taxes, most of them claim 8, 9, 10 dependents, so they have very little taken out of the check. If they use a Social Security number, most of the time it's a fraudulent Social Security number. It's a huge problem, and we better wake up because it is a serious problem that's impacting our neighborhoods, our economy, our quality of life, and it's simply the rule of law, and it's about time we bring dignity back to this rule of law in this country.
Thank you, Russell, and we're going to go ahead and take your calls. You have an opportunity. It's 480-874-1311. 480-874-1311. Now, this is how it's going to work. I'm going to tell Gordy, you know, when it hits 30 seconds, I'm sitting here watching, he pushes the button. You know, we're going to someone else because, you know, they're already filled up. So we're going to go through them real quick. Now, the initiative that we're talking about here, very simply, says that you have to show identification in order to vote. And the identification that you have now for any benefits that you would get from the state has to be identification from a state, this state, any state, that says it has been checked to make sure that you are a legal immigrant before you got the ID. So by showing this ID means that you are a U.S. citizen or here legally before you can get a benefit. Sounds reasonable. I don't really have a problem with the initiative. I'm only wanting to make sure that you understand that what the price is going to be for this, instead of let's focus on getting rid of the welfare system, what we're going to do is say, well, we're going to make welfare okay for people that are here, so you legitimize the welfare. And the second thing is you're going to have a national ID card. So I'm going, look, I just want you going in eyes wide open on this thing, because that's what's going to happen. National ID card, legitimizing welfare for citizens. So that is my concern. Other than that, you know, hey, you know, rule of law, like Russell says. But we'll be right back and take your calls after this break and a check on traffic with Danny Sullivan. You know, what we have here is a situation that is just great example is the savings and loan debacle of the late 80s. This is what happened. Reagan comes in. He says, you know what? We're going to deregulate the savings and industry, savings and loan industry. We're going to say this money that all these people give you, instead of being restricted on them going into homes or they have to have all kinds of restrictions and regulations on how you use the money, we're going to let you compete in the free market. We're going to let you spend and invest your money any way you want. But we also are going to federally insure it. We're going to insure the depositors that you spending their money any way you want is going to be paid back by the taxpayer. Well, gee, guess what happened? All kinds of risky loans, things went out, they did whatever they wanted. It was insured. Then who got held, you know, with the bag? It was the taxpayers. Now, the same thing with immigration. They'll say, you know what? Let's not patrol the border. Let's have it all open. But at the same time, we're going to insure everybody. So you can't have both. I'm saying if you're going to let people come in, fine. I'm all for it. Knock yourself out. Be my guest. But it's not going to cost me anything. I don't want to have to. You know, the Statue of Liberty is not holding a welfare role. You know, it's you bring us your tired, your hungry, your poor huddled masses, and you be productive or you starve. I have no problem with that. But what's amazing to me is the biggest complaint is who? I mean, it's only the government that complains about more customers. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I just don't care. I'll compete in a free market. You know, bring them on in. But the thing is that the way the system is now is not going to work. It is going to drain us severely. Russell Pierce, Rusty Childress, and Henry Esparza have a solution. They believe to kind of stop it. It's an initiative. It says you must be a documented citizen in order to register to vote and to vote. And if you're going to get any benefits whatsoever, you have to be a have ID that has checked to see if you are a legal resident. Well, that sounds okay. Yeah, you know, I mean, on the surface, that's good. You know, I can live with that. The problem is to be able to do that, I know it's going to require. It's going to require a national ID. We're going to go to the phones. We're going to go real fast. So we're going to try and take all your calls. It's 480-874-1311. 480-874-1311. Just keep calling as they drop off. Bobby, go ahead.
Freedom good, government bad, bad, bad. Divide and conquer is the rule here in place, which is a good way to take over. The rule of law, there is none. It is the powers that are in place to keep the status quo or below. It's a conglomeration effort between Aztlan, the five families in Mexico, the big boys in our country, and in any country, to make us all one big happy family with the papers or a mark on our butt. Adios.
Thanks, Bobby. Go ahead and go to Paul real quick. Paul, you there?
Hello.
Go ahead,
hey,
Paul.
Hey, listen, I think that you've got to take a look at the bigger situation here. The status quo is being maintained, but the reason why is very simple. The Mexican government is on the hook in terms of a deficit of $80 billion is what the Mexican government, and the Mexican government owes this to American Wall Street banks. Basically, what would happen is if we were to either open the border and let anybody come across that wanted to work, or if we were to militarize the border and close it, either situation could result in a destabilization of the Mexican government and a collapse of the Mexican government. And then where would these Wall Street banks be on the hook with that money?
Good point. Good point. Go ahead and go to Dave, Apache Junction. It's 480-874-1311.
Good morning.
Dave, go ahead.
Article 1, Section 9 says Congress shall make the laws for immigration. And until Congress says that they can come here illegally, anybody that's helping them or giving them jobs or aiding and abetting in a federal crime.
Amen.
Good point, Dave.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Now, Rusty, I see here you got Sonoran News that talks about Aztlan. You know, now this is a – basically what it is that – the southwestern United States used to be part of Mexico. Now, I remember...
And they want it back.
And, well, who are the original owners? I mean, you know, let's go back, you know, let's give it to what, the Apaches? I mean, you know, you got to go back so far. Now, you know, we had reparations issues on this show before. You know, a libertarian will say, you know, yeah, you know, if you steal something from somebody, you know, it should go back to them. You know, at what point? You know, where do we draw the line who it goes back to? If you say, no, it's not theirs because we have it, and I go, well, let me tell you who wins. It's a guy with a gun. Now, they come up and say, you know what? We kicked you out and we got nukes. It's ours now. And it's theirs. So we were always rule of the gun throughout the world. So this Aslan thing, is this really a threat, or is this just, you know, a couple of guys in their living room in Sunita that are, you know, come up with this, and they're just given a much more play by us here as the whipping boy? I mean, how serious is this effort?
I had old Ricardo Pimentel this last week ask me, do you really believe this Aslan deal? I said, it doesn't really matter because they believe it. The other day when we were at City Hall fighting against these hiring halls, illegal hiring halls, we had some folks from Aslan. They had T-shirts on that said that. And the guy comes up to me and points his finger in my face and says, do you believe in manifest destiny? I said, well, why do you ask? Do you believe in manifest destiny? And believe me, they believe it, and that's the point. There are some militant folks out there that say, hey, look, we had this thing first, we want it back. And I'm saying, look, I like it the way it is. It's my country. I'm proud of it. And no.
See, that's why we got to deal with principle here. Because you always got someone else going to use the exact same reason that you have against you. You know, manifest destiny, you learn about that as a kid in school. It was going to be America from coast to coast and pole to pole. Well, we kind of like, okay, well, we don't want to cross the desert too much. So we'll go ahead and stop here, all right? And it's getting a little cold up there, so we took the best parts. So, you know, the United States government, you know, decided that, you know, this is where we're at. So we got this, we're happy. You know, Alaska come in, Hawaii, yeah, we're good. You know, are we really looking to get imperialized, you know, and go somewhere else? Well, you know, there's a big argument. That's a whole other show. But the thing is that we have the same thing that we did to other cultures. We have now another culture say they're going to do to us. And we can't morally say, you know, we're better than they are because we did it. We have to use a principle. We have to somehow come to a realization that, okay, let's go ahead and deal with property rights. Let's have private property. To say that the government owns it is a mistake, because then you have another government say, yeah, well, we say we own it. How about we privately deed everything to everybody, and then we have the sole purpose of government is protecting individual rights, life, liberty, and property. Now we're justified. Now we can have the United States military go and, you know, guard our borders like we have Ranch Rescue doing, because that would be protection of individual rights. It's my property. Mine. Mine, 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 mine. And when it belongs to everybody, it belongs to nobody. And that's, I see we're missing the focus on what needs to be the focus here. Now, let's get back to the initiative. The initiative says what? It says that if you are going to vote, you have to demonstrate that you are who you say you are. And I'm telling you, I've been dealing with voting a long time, and there is fraud. I will make no hesitation saying fraud, 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 fraud. Okay? You heard it here. And everybody knows, anybody involved in the process knows. Russell Pierce, you are House Appropriations Chairman. You've been in state government for quite a while in service. And tell me, do you believe there is no fraud in voting? Go ahead, say it. Come on.
We know there's fraud, and that's the reason we wrote this initiative. We know there's fraud. We know that there are thousands. In fact, when Betsy Bayless ran for Secretary of State on one of her shows, and I think it's even put it on paper, but anyway, she talked about there's over 400,000 people on a registration rolls we cannot verify. I mean, we know there's a problem. Border Patrol is picking up people every day and finding voter registration cards. Ex-Governor Hall, when she was Secretary of State, told me about a story in Tucson where they were swearing in the largest group ever of folks to become citizens, because one of the great things when you're a citizen in this country is to participate in our election process. They handed out registration forms. They got half of them back, and because the people said, we're already registered. We know there's a problem. To continue to wink at it and play like there's no problem is sad. And the fact that we're not more aggressive in the enforcement of laws, protection, and the integrity of our election process, and doling out other people's money to people in this country illegally, to me is a crime.
I applaud your efforts. I want you to continue. You have my support. But I cannot give this information to my audience without warning them of what I see is coming. It is going to be a national ID card, and it is going to be a bad thing. And you're going to have to make sure that you make the decision. Is that what I'm willing? Am I willing to give up a little bit of freedom for a little security? And that's always the question. And you lose both, deserve neither, And when we come back after this break and check on traffic, we'll get to Henry. He has something to say. We'll be right back. Here in Arizona, we have a deficit. Now, this is one of the statements, you know, Rusty was telling me that they're using. They're going, you know, to pay for this deficit that we have because of these illegal aliens, we are selling public land in the process, you know, to help fund this. Well, our state constitution, that's how they were supposed to fund public education. The state lands by, you know, lease costs for surface usage and all that kind of stuff. The state lands were to fund public education, converted into private hands. Well, what happens is like we were talking about before, you know, developers run the state. Get used to it. And the thing is that we have all this public land that incrementally, as they want it, as they desire, they are taking and converting it to private hands so they can build Anthem. All right? And I'm telling you, they do not want private land, you know, from the public land to be turned private until they are ready to buy it. See, there's no one against it going into private land. You know, there's no one against, you know, let's just get it to private so we can use the force of government to defend individual rights. They just want to be able to get it when they want it. It's just sitting there on the shelf. Let me tell you, Ernie wants to go buy some public land. Not going to happen. Not going to do it. Not prudent at this juncture until when? Until a developer wants it. Now, we'll get into developers another time. That's a whole nother, you know, get Ernie killed issue. All right? So let's go ahead. Henry, go ahead. Something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I read an article a couple of days back where a gentleman was kind of monitoring some of the polls, and I'm not sure the exact location. But he noticed one thing, that a bus load of, I'm going to say Hispanics, arrived at a poll to vote. They got off the bus, did their voting. The thing that different was this man was handing out, you know, ID or whatever paper it was that he couldn't see it.
Your name today is.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. They went in there, did their voting, boarded the bus, went to another location, did the same thing again. Papers had different than the first one. And off the bus, into the polls again. Now, this is the bus full of Hispanics. Now, I'm sure it's not the touring company to see what it's like around here. It was an obvious reason what they were doing. This man has witnessed that. And sometimes I think I've seen that even in Chandler when I went to the voting polls there. I noticed a carload, four or five cars full of Hispanics, and somebody was talking. I thought he was interpreting in Spanish what to do. It was just here. Here's his passport. Do what you need to do. I never really noticed what it was until the gentleman made that statement. Then it came to light to me what it was. And by the way, it's CHT, Civil Homeland Defense, is what we patrol with, and not Ranch Rescue.
Yeah, two different things.
Yes.
Two different things. Now, Ranch Rescue is more about private property.
Yeah, and we're more like patrolling the border. But keep in mind that we don't just get them and detain them, call BP. You know, we offer them medical help, water, food, blank, whatever they need. They are people in need. We do help them as much as we can. But as I said in the past, the law is the law. We help them all that we can to assist them, but we will turn them in at the same time without any question.
And what happens to them then?
Well, then the BP takes them and probably gives them a little dinner and maybe a movie or two off to Tucson, who knows what for, and back across the border again.
So then what happens?
So then we could just bust them on Thursday again. We see this. I saw the guy on Monday, and then I bust him on Thursday. You know, it's a revolving door, in and out.
Been in the fast food industry for a long time as a manager and a restaurant owner, and I have heard the most amazing stories that people have gone through to come to this country. And I'll tell you one thing. This is what is of interest to me. The people that came and settled America, that chose freedom over oppression, that chose economic opportunity over poverty, that chose to risk everything to come to this country across an open ocean of water or desert, you know, these are the better people. These are the best. These are the ones that know, I don't want to be here, and they have the initiative. They're the kind of people that made America great. Mm-hmm. Well, these are the people that are coming across the border, mm-hmm. and they'll keep going and going and trying until they get here. And this, so I really have absolutely no stigmatism or stereotype or stigma that I would put on an individual that wants to come here to be free, that wants to be productive. I don't see them as the problem. I see something else as the problem. I see the government as the problem. And I'm hoping that what your initiative does will address, you know, what the problem is that, you know, there's too much government for these people to come get. But this national ID thing just bothers the snot out of me. Doesn't it concern you guys?
They do not take an oath of citizenship when they cross that border illegally. They are not here in respect of our laws or anything that is of America. They're here for their own self-interest, and
good.
That's the back door. That's illegal. We have laws here. We talk about rule of law, and that's what we're trying to defend here.
You know, I have no problem with I do. You know, just to say rule of law, and you show me the law first, you know, before I tell you whether I support it or not. And to me, government has a simple function. Protect the rights of the individual. The second that use of force is used against the rights of an individual, the law is bad. I was at jury duty yesterday. I'm just waiting. I can't wait. I'm like, go ahead. Give me a drug case. The boy's going home. I'm sorry. You know, he wasn't bothering anybody. The guy was smoking a joint, you know, in his house or had someone in his car run it to buy. Have a nice day. Not guilty. So that's... They don't find me on juries much. Well, you know, thanks, guys. We're out of time. I appreciate you coming in. We had a good time. I think we learned something. The audience learned something. I'm sorry I didn't get to more of your calls, you know, but, you know, it was a good issue. We want to make sure we got it out. We'll see you tomorrow here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.